I've been so blessed to be able to have so much contact with different situations and with people with dementia, with different dementias, different stages of dementia. And by the way, my baby was late stage, nonverbal. Lord, I knew they were in there. I knew there was a way, you had to find a way to open up that door that they were closing because they could no longer communicate with the outside world. So somehow or another, there was a way to get in there. And there's quite a few ways, even with late stage dementia, to at least have that glimmer of opening that window for a short time, even if it's for a short time, because they're still there. That's what's so important to know. And never lose that in your heart, that they're still there.
Welcome to the All's Authors Podcast. We're so glad you found us. I'm Mary Ann Schuco, a registered nurse, author, and dementia daughter. Join me each week to listen to one of our more than 250 authors talk about their dementia journey, sharing intimate details and painfully obtained knowledge to help others currently on that path. We hope these stories offer you comfort and support as we strive to break the silence and stigma surrounding a dementia diagnosis. May one of our authors speak to your experience.
Content presented on the following podcast is for information purposes only. Views and opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent views of the Holt Care Network. Always consult your physician for medical and fitness advice, and always consult your attorney for legal advice. And thank you for listening to the Holt Care Network.
Today's guest is Katia De La Huisa, an artist, expressive arts program designer, freelance writer, and author with 20 years experience working with those living with dementia and their families. She firmly believes that when we change the way we look at something, what we look at changes. Katia's experience working in long-term care facilities as both a caregiver and as an art director has given her a wealth of insight into the dementia diseases, family dynamics, communication, miscommunication, and more. Her passion is communicating with people in late-stage disease using the visual arts, collage in particular. She believes that no matter how advanced a person's dementia may be, there is still a person inside who is reachable if we use the right tools and methods. She is the founder and director of the nonprofit The Infinite Mind Dementia Project in Costa Rica and the author of the book Journey Through the Infinite Mind, The Science and Spirituality of Dementia. In this episode, overflowing with practical advice and much to think about, we discuss how to connect with those who have dementia, why we should, quote, move into the now, unquote, tips on how to evaluate a nursing home, and why dementia instills such paralyzing fear in all of us as individuals and as societies. Hi, Katia. Welcome to the All's Authors Podcast. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Marianne, for inviting me. I'm doing pretty good here in sunny Costa Rica. This is where I reside.
Yes, and you told me you've been living there for quite a while.
40 years. Yeah, I've been here pretty much 40 years.
So that's wonderful. You're my first South American author to interview, I believe. Yeah, we are a global organization. I don't know if listeners know that, but All's Authors extends all over the world. We have authors in the United Kingdom, South Africa, Israel, Costa Rica, Australia, and of course the U.S. and Canada. So we have very large branches. So welcome to our podcast today. I'm excited to speak with you because you offer a different point of view on the dementia experience as an artist, and you have done a lot of work and exploration with using art with dementia care, and I just want to hear a lot about that. So if you could tell us how you got started, that'd be great.
Well, I started out with the doing art therapy. I was doing art therapy for a mainstream public. And I moved back to the United States for about 4 years. And I got a job working for a small nursing home who wanted me to create an all-inclusive art therapy. So that's something that they could all do. It was a small nursing home, 27 people. And I quickly learned that I didn't know very much about anything concerning elders, because at the time I had been working for 15 years with street children in five different countries in Central America. So this was my first experience with seniors. And when I started the workshop, I suddenly realized they put 10 people in a table, and I suddenly realized that there's something wrong here. They're just not paying attention. They're not understanding what I'm saying. And so I asked one of the staff what's going on, and the staff said, oh, they have dementia, Alzheimer's, they can't do art. And I went, okay. And so then I decided to really work at this, and I thought, well, maybe a one-on-one project would be better. And I enlisted family members and students from an art college in Sarasota to be volunteer companions. And so each person with dementia had a companion that was working with them with the art, and it became a one-on-one program. I used collage making. I've been a collage mixed media artist most of my life, for over 50 years. And I thought, well, collage making is not so hard. I'm going to have them pick out the pictures, and the companions will do the mechanical stuff, the cutting and pasting and holding the magazine and turning the pages if they can't do it. And it worked really well. Even with nonverbal later stages, we're picking out pictures and positioning the images. And I thought, oh, this is a great art program. Okay, but it's one-on-one. So I created this project. In the middle of one workshop, one of the wives of the residents started to cry. She just started to cry. I said, what's happening, Mary? And she showed me her collage that she had made with her husband, James. And there was all kinds of things that pertained to his life. Like there was a tractor, there was basketball. He was a basketball coach. These were all things he had picked out. But up in the corner, he had picked out the words, I'm okay, I'm alive. He was late stage, nonverbal, one of the people that wander all the time, couldn't make eye contact. She didn't even believe that he even knew that she was there every day to see him. And she was just bawling her eyes out. She said, I did not want to put that in the corner. And that's when my little light bulbs went on. I went, oh my God, this is a communication. They're communicating through these pictures. So I got very, very excited. I did a lot of study on how images affect the brain and why they are so effective as a communicator. And I went to the Alzheimer's Association in Sarasota and showed them my results. Well, the end result was we partnered, got a pretty good sizable grant, and I created caregiver workshops. And I did that for 4 years in the States and about another 5 years here in Costa Rica.
So that sounds like groundbreaking work.
It was interesting. I got to say, what was the best part of it was that I could communicate with people that people couldn't communicate with through the pictures. So I learned a lot about where they are in different stages. And one of the things that I am absolutely positive of is they are never gone. They're never gone. Even when the brain is deteriorated to a point where it seems like they're just vegetables, that is not true. I've actually had people that were in vegetative states where they actually started to interact with their family member using that technique. So I just felt that they're very misunderstood. I think the whole disease is really misunderstood.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, and I just find it to be so powerful to be able to do that kind of communication, because I know people are starving for that.
Yes.
Family members, and I'm sure the individuals themselves are just desperately trying to say something.
Well, remember, when you have brain damage, your communication skills change. Your way of perceiving the world and your perception is different. So it's, when they did these collages together, the companion went into the world of the person with dementia. It was much easier for them to use the pictures as that bridge to also enter into their world rather than bringing the person with dementia out into the caregiver's or the companion's world. What was really interesting was at the end of every workshop, it was really noisy because you'd have people conversing. They say, oh, you made it, oh, a dog. I used to have a dog. Did you have a dog? And they would have these intense conversations, and it was deafening. It was so loud with all of these people talking at the same time. And at the end of the workshops, I always ask the same thing. I said, how many of you have background noise problems? And invariably, practically all the people, except the people with dementia, of course, but the companions would hold up their hand. Yeah, I do. I say, well, did you notice the noise while you guys were doing this? And all of them would be astounded that they had not noticed the noise, and the noise was deafening. So when you hyper focus on the person with dementia, turn off the phones, it's there, the only thing that exists. Then you enter into their world. Then you connect with them and can enter into their world. So it's not just doing the project with the pictures. I mean, anything you're going to do with them, you have to shut off the rest of the world and hyper focus on them. And then you will find that they're much more cooperative and they're much more aware, and they will interact more with you. But not if you have a million things going and the television's on and the blender's going and you've got to make dinner. No, you have to stop for even 3 minutes to just hyper focus on that person. Everything else stops. And that's what I've discovered, at least with increasing interaction.
That's all very helpful advice, and I'm not sure if a lot of people even realize that, because we are so busy and we do tend to multitask and maybe don't realize that it's robbing us of time and contact with our loved ones. So that may be a good practice, not for every minute of the day, but for a certain time in the day when something either really needs to be done, like, you know, dressing or bathing or eating, or even just during leisure time.
I cannot express how important it is to take 20 minutes of your day, to just spend some quality time with your loved one. Quality time means turn everything off. There's nothing but them. Nothing but them. Even if it's just to hold their hand for 20 minutes. It's so important that they get that one-on-one focused attention just at least once a day. And it's also important for the caregiver, because they have a tendency as the person progresses to emotionally distance themselves. It helps bring them back, especially using touch. This is all in my book. My book it focuses on a lot of innovative information, and it focuses also on healthy brain. How does a healthy brain work, and how does dementia affect that healthy brain? And how do we perceive the world as healthy human beings? How can a healthy brain perceive the world? And how is that perception changed through dementia? So my focus in my book is basically to put the reader in the shoes of the person with dementia, so that they can start to understand what their inner world is, so they can deal with their outer world on an easier basis. Because if you don't know what's going on the inside of somebody, it's pretty hard to understand what they're doing or saying if it's not in your realm of reality, let's say. Your realm of reality is people converse when they're going to communicate. Well, there's other ways to communicate, and people with dementia, when they can no longer talk or they have lost words, have other ways of communicating. So I have a lot of that in my book on how the different forms of communication, that you can use. Very practical, simple, practical information. But touching on subjects that I haven't found in other dementia information. I'm always researching, because right now I'm writing a second book, and I'm always researching what's new, what's coming up. And most of my focus has to do with human consciousness. I think dementia, the study of dementia is an incredible way to understand human consciousness and how they live in an altered state. What is their altered state? What is it when a human being enters into an altered state while you're in this world? So you're living in two worlds. They're living in the normal world, quote unquote, and they're living in an altered state. Well, if the caregiver or family or friends, they're not living in the altered state. They don't know what that altered state is. So in order for them to, I think, effectively care for somebody and not become emotionally detached, you need to enter into their world however you can.
You're certainly giving our listeners a lot to think about. So this is encouraging. Thank you. Your book, where is it available?
It's on Amazon. The publisher, booklocker.com, also distributes books, and Barnes & Noble.
And is it available in an ebook and a paperback hardcover? Or?
It's available on a Kindle and paperback. So on my website, I have a free mentoring, and I also have free blogs. So I write blogs pretty much about 4 or 5 a week, and there are also articles that I submit to magazines. So on my website, people can go to the free blog section and get a lot of information. I mean, there's probably 100 blogs there right now. And I'm getting people calling me from all over the world for the mentoring. So I do free mentoring, and I really want to help people, you know, but I'm not I'm not a caregiver support group. I'm not a psychologist. I'm basically more like a dementia coach. So I'm going to help to give you solutions to different situations, and also to help people change their own perspective, because when you change the way you look at something, things change. So that's my focus. I don't focus so much on hearing, you know, all the daily day-to-day problems. Just people call me with specific issues that they'd like to find solutions for. I'm a fixer. I'm not the greatest listener, unfortunately.
So anybody listening today can go on your website and sign up to get free mentoring?
Yes.
And that's done through email or Zoom, or how do you do that?
I do it on Zoom, or I do it on Facebook video messaging. So they can go to my Facebook page and friend me, and then we just simply video message with Facebook. So it's my Facebook page is Katia De Luisa.
How does somebody find the website?
Okay, well, the name of the book is The Journey Through the Infinite Mind. So the website is www.theinfinitemind.org.
I'll put all that information in the show notes so people can take a look at that. And they're looking to connect. That sounds like a great idea. I think a lot of people might be interested in doing that.
And it's also wonderful for me too, because I learn from everybody, and I think it's a very mutual learning. I don't mm-hmm. pretend to have all the answers. When I don't have the answer to something, I'll say maybe I'll try and find an answer, or I just don't know. So it's not like mm-hmm. I have all the answers. And when I have, you know, I have to schedule the time, because I don't just do mentoring. I'm running a project right now, and it's a brand new. We started in the middle of COVID, so you can imagine how it's been really difficult to try to put together a project, an educational project of dementia, where I'm taking education into the rural areas of Costa Rica on dementia. This is where they have no information about it at all. So this is our goal here in this country.
Do you know how many people in Costa Rica have dementia?
We have approximately, I believe it's 35,000 diagnosed. But because we have rural areas, that it could probably be 3 times that amount. Mm-hmm. Because this is only diagnosed. And Our main area in Costa Rica is pretty small. And our main area is the Central Valley, which is the capital city. And that's pretty much where most of the diagnosis is done. in the rural areas, the doctors are still saying, oh, you're just getting older, you know, oh, you know, you're a little forgetful. No, that's not true. You need to be tested. You need to be, you know, make sure, because the earlier it's found, the faster you can do something about slowing the symptoms, at least. And in some cases, actually reversing the dementia. I mean, B12 deficiency mimics dementia symptoms. Thyroid imbalance will give you dementia symptoms. So there's a lot of things that can be regulated that will actually reverse it. So it doesn't mean just because you're getting memory loss or you're foggy brain that you're getting dementia. So it's very important people go get tested as soon as possible.
Yes, I agree. I think that people often are so afraid of being told that they have dementia that they don't want to get evaluated and find out. And it could be a number of other things. Even something as simple as a UTI can cause cognitive and behavioral changes. And that's very extreme. And that can be corrected with an antibiotic. So not everybody's going to have a simple fix.
No.
But you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your loved one to get a solid diagnosis. And then once you have a diagnosis, if it is a dementia, it gives you the opportunity to make plans for your future.
And also diet, exercise. There's a lot of things that you can do to slow the progression of dementia if you get it early enough, you know. And so I think it's really important early diagnosis. And maybe if one of the things I'm advocating, I'm definitely an advocate, is because I'm a baby boomer, I'm early wave baby boomer. There has to be a change in the elder care system. It's pretty much set up for my mother. You know, I mean, I was doing a lot of training for years in nursing homes where I was training caregivers, the CNAs and the nurses and so on communication. My specialty has become communication with people with dementia. In other words, that's where I hyper focus. And in these nursing homes, the programs, the activities programs, the way it's set up is not set up for my generation. And I'm personally, I don't want to go there. So there are some nursing homes that I feel are very effective, which are small group homes. I love small group homes. It gives a much more feeling of you're in a home, you're in a family. You've asked the caregivers, the CNAs, how long they've been working there. If they've only been working there 6 months, have second thoughts about that place. If somebody says, oh, I've been working here 10 years, it's wonderful. Then you go, wow, there's something here. Oh, I'm so lucky to have found you. Also, there's a program called the Butterfly Homes that's out of Canada and England, which is absolutely fabulous. So it's not just because it's a nursing home, it's a horrible situation. It's just that the larger nursing homes have not gotten they haven't gotten the news yet that they need to downscale and maybe create several smaller nursing homes rather than having some gigantic place where nobody gets individual attention. So this was one of my biggest advocacy gripes because I spent so much time going in and out of different nursing homes doing trainings that it just really irked me. So for a while, I was an advocate, a family advocate for people who had loved ones in a nursing home. I would go in and make sure they were getting what they needed to get, and then I would report to the family. And if they didn't get what they got, what they needed, the family would, I taught the family how to be very proactive in making nursing homes listen to them about better care for their loved one. Very important that the family is proactive. Don't be afraid to make the nursing home angry at you. They will actually take better care of you, of your loved one just to get you out of their hair.
That is true, because that in my days working in the nursing homes, whenever you had a resident who had an active family, they would say, you know, so-and-so's daughter is coming today, make sure this and make sure that, and be right on top of what was going on. And usually it was the people who had nobody that didn't get any extra bells or whistles. And those are the people I would focus on because I knew they had nobody to advocate for them.
But you were a special person.
They'd be afraid of that daughter or that family member coming in and finding fault and, you know, raising hell. And it worked.
Yeah, it does. And I say never let them know you're coming. Never let them know you're coming. Just go at different times. Say, I'm sorry, I'm here. I'm see my mother, whatever. Then you can be sure they're going to get really good care.
Yeah, my stepfather, when he would visit my mother's sister, he'd go late in the evening, like 8, 9, 10 o'clock, after hours, have to let him in, and he'd go in. And one of the things he always did was he checked her feet to make sure she had her socks on and her feet were covered because he didn't want her to be cold. And then if she didn't have her socks on, then he would complain, or he thought she was cold, he would complain about that. But that was always his thing. He would show up at odd times, and it worked. Keep them on their toes.
Absolutely. I've always recommended people go in at odd times and then don't be afraid to be proactive. They're not going to kick your loved one out because you're being proactive about the care.
And they often have councils and things like that, organizations where you can, family members can get together and be part of the team, an advisory team to the
yes.
owners or the managers or whoever, the administrators of the facility too. And that's a good thing. And I think some of them even have a residence council.
That's called the Person Care Program. That's been around for a while. Unfortunately, not a whole lot of nursing homes have incorporated it, but it is. It involves not only the residents, but the people that work there too, because it prevents burnout. Everybody's involved in the policies and so on. Person-centered care is absolutely wonderful. If the place you're looking at says they have person-centered care, that's a thumbs up as far as I'm concerned.
So these are all great tips that you're giving us from an outsider's perspective in the sense that you weren't there with your loved one, correct? Because your experience is mainly professional?
Well, I don't know how about it professional, because there was a time where I was working as a hired caregiver to come in and take care of people in the home, which was wonderful for me because I got all that individual learning from the person with dementia and how different the different family dynamics were. I learned a lot about the different family dynamics and how no one can really judge what's going on with a family, because until you've walked in their shoes, and it's all different. Every family dynamic is different. Every home care situation is different. Every person with dementia in a home care situation, it's a different dynamic. So it was pretty interesting. For about 2 years, I did that on the side. I was doing that to make money in between my workshops, because the workshops were contracted. So sometimes there was times where I wasn't making, you know, getting my work in. So I would do the home caregiving, and it really helped with my book. Now, it wasn't a family member, and what I did discover was how difficult it is when it's your family member and you have these, what I would call, you have history. When I would go in, I could just love the person instantly the way they were today. Whatever situation they were in, that was the person that I would learn to love, was that person. Who that person was before, the family would always say, oh, she was this or he was that. That really didn't matter to me, because what I was interested in was the person today and who they are today and how to interact with them today. Whereas families, this is an interesting thing. I've written some articles on this, is that it's really hard to unconditionally love somebody who isn't your mom anymore. You know, how many caregivers say, I'm living with a stranger? How many caregivers say, my mom is gone? Oh, my dad died years ago. He's still alive, but he died years ago. How many people are saying that and actually feeling it and emotionally starting to distance themselves from their loved one? And it has to do with the fact that there's history involved and an expectation of who they used to be. Oh, he was a brilliant mathematician, and now he doesn't even recognize numbers. Well, if I came in, he didn't recognize whether he was a mathematician or not didn't matter because I wasn't involved in that. I didn't have that expectation of him, that history with him. Or if you have emotional issues with your family, the person you're caring for, such as child abuse. Oh my gosh, I wrote a whole chapter on, well, this isn't in my book, but it was a pretty long article on caring for the not so loved one, I called it. Because, you know, people end up having to care for the child abuser, the person that abused them as a child. Terrible situation. I got a lot of responses. All of these things I put on, all of these writings I put on social media to see what my responses are from the caregivers, because I'm on about 40 caregiver dementia sites. So I'm learning all the time. I'm learning from them all the time. And you'd be really amazed at how many people are out there caring for their childhood abuser, whether it was their mother or their father or even sexual abuse, and they're caring for them now. Terribly difficult, you know. I mean, how do you keep from being triggered all the time? Even if you just had a difficult relationship with your mother, she's going to say something or she's going to raise her eyebrow and it's going to trigger. How do you keep from that? You know, it's really very important to learn about moving into the now, which, by the way, is how we work on our consciousness. To raise our own consciousness, our own personal consciousness, we need to work on the now. Not just with people with dementia. It's pretty much in everybody's lives. And that's another aspect of the book that I want to mention is that the book is called, you know, The Journey Through the Infinite Mind, The Science and Spirituality of Dementia. Spirituality is very seldom mentioned concerning dementia, unless it has a religious connotation. So it's, I've read several books and I've gone online to try and find more and more information that has to do with the basic spirituality of the human being with dementia, and I have found almost nothing. I have found mostly religious, you know, where people were talking about Christianity or different types of religion, and you know, read the Bible to them or sing their hymns, or which is all very good. But I wanted to go even deeper than that because I believe the human spirit, it regardless of the religion or regardless of your life situation, the human spirit is something that is unchangeable. That's my belief. All right. I can only give you what my belief is. And I was never able to talk about it when I was working for hospice or working for the Alzheimer's Association. I mean, I did conferences and things with them with the programs I developed. And I always had to downplay everything because this was 20 years ago. But now with the baby boomers all getting older, and many baby boomers have taken yoga, they do meditation, you know, there's a whole nother focus about what we are as human beings. Who are we as human beings? And so my book was written on the premises that we are a spirit having a human experience. And sometimes that human experience is really devastating. But it's still a spirit having a human experience, not a human becoming a spirit. We're already there. Then my question was, is the spirit affected by dementia? Because basically it's brain generated thoughts that gets affected with the brain damage, but is the brain the spirit? So my book questions, it doesn't say, oh, it's 100% this way or that way. It opens up questions for the reader, where the reader starts to think about these things, it shows the science of, say, for instance, perception, and then it's, well, what if this is the truth and this is the science of it, what if this is happening? It's about questioning yourself, questioning your own existence, questioning how your perceptions are of the world around you. And when you have dementia, when a person has dementia, all of these perceptions are changing. And I go into quite a bit of detail about perceptual changes during dementia, so that people can understand what is happening with their loved one and what is the world that they are living in and they cannot escape from. There's no way to bring them back. to your world other than you going in with them and being present with them. It's about, again, it's about being present. So, and also being present with yourself. I talk about, in the book, I talk about meditation, for instance. Every single caregiver, I'm sorry, but I really believe every single caregiver should take 20 minutes a day for themselves to meditate. Even if they wake themselves up early to meditate. There's all kinds of science about how meditation changes your brain waves for the better. So you will be calmer. You will be able to deal with crisis better if every single day you create a meditation practice or a yoga practice a couple of times a week. These are things that just calm you out, calm you down. And it's more important for the caregiver to take really good care of themselves than it is for the care that they're giving for the person with dementia. The person with dementia, the basic care and love is all they're looking for. But the caregiver needs more. The caregiver needs that time to de-stress, to disconnect for even 20 minutes from the situation that they're 24/7.
Okay, that's very good advice as well. I know that I've tried to do some of those things that you're suggesting, and I do find that it helps me to relax and to clear my mind, because we all have too many things going on in our thoughts or like on a runaway track. So right. When you can quiet your mind, now you bring that sense of peace and calm with you into whatever interaction that you might have. So it's important.
This is another interesting thing for the reader, for the people that are listening to know. Emotions are contagious.
Yes.
All right. I mean, if we're around an angry person, we trigger and we get angry. If you're around a depressed person, it's hard to not feel awful. People with dementia, because they're losing the ability to reason, their ability to sense emotion is heightened. It's kind of like you lose one sense and the rest of the senses become heightened. The problem is they can understand that you're upset. They will not be able to understand why you're upset. They won't understand that it's not them, because at some point the person with dementia loses self-identity. I know that's a little difficult. The book explains it really well. How? Here's an instance. A young child, a baby, when a baby looks in the mirror and sees another baby in the mirror, it's his own reflection, he thinks it's another baby. That's one step in child development. When that baby suddenly realizes that it's its own reflection, that's the moment that the baby becomes self-aware. A person with dementia looks in the mirror, and if they recognize themselves, they still have self-awareness. But when they think there's somebody else in the mirror, they are losing self-awareness. In other words, they cannot separate themselves from their environment anymore. So the emotions you're going to be portraying or displaying to them is what they are going to become. So you're angry, they're angry. You're tired and irritated, they get irritated. It just keeps mirroring it. They mirror your emotions. That's why it's so important for the caregiver to self-care. So important. I can't even stress how important that is.
And I will also stress how important that is. However, you opt to get it. Even just listening to this podcast once a week can be your self-care activity.
Yes.
Something that simple, you know, when yes. you're on a drive or while you're doing the dishes or your loved one's taking a nap.
I agree.
Yeah. So what do you think is the most frightening thing for Alzheimer's caregivers? What have you observed?
I'm gonna go beyond the caregiver. I think the stigma. Mm-hmm. The stigma of mental illness and going crazy. Basically, that's how it's seen. It's people see it as a mental illness, but it's not really put into the mental illness category. You know, it's put into the dementia category. Like, so it's that stigma, that horrible fear of mental illness and the fear of being locked away. I'll tell you, there's for dementia, it's fear. There's just fear all the way around. Fear about getting it, fear about having to care for somebody. It's fear.
That is a very concise way of putting it. And I think that you're onto something too, because people do fear getting it. I know my mom, she would pray to God, please don't let me get Alzheimer's, please. Because her sister had it and she didn't want to end up like her sister. And then there's the fear of, what am I going to do? My husband has dementia, all the ramifications of that. How is this going to affect me? How is it going to affect him? How's it going to affect our family? How's it going to affect our finances? What am I going to do when I can't take care of him anymore? What am I going to do when he's gone? I mean, the list of concerns is endless, endless. So I think you're right. And, you know, then there's the societal fear, because the cost of care for people with dementia is exorbitant and only getting greater every day, because there are more and more people every day. So then we have to worry about, how are we going to support that? What about research? What about a cure?
I think just the fear of dementia in general, it's, you know, I have a knack. I don't know what it is, but I'm able to spot people in supermarkets with, mm-hmm. with dementia, or in stores who have, you know, earlier stages, or at the checkout counter and you can see them struggling with coins or something like that. And the public is horrendous, because there isn't an understanding about dementia, and dementia is epidemic proportions across the globe right now. And as a result, we need to have more education about it to eliminate the fear. You know, but even the mental health, I did an interview with the Missouri Mental Health, and they had a television program, and they talked about how difficult it is to even get budgets for mental health, or to get programs started for mental health. Mental health has always been put to the side ever since they started throwing people into the snake pits back several centuries ago, you know, and I don't think we've moved that far out of those dark ages as far as mental health goes, and what resources are available, let alone what resources are available for dementia, which is just dwindling as we speak, you know? And, so yeah, it's the fear. And I believe the solution is education. Just start educating, educate. Things change when people have knowledge. I always feel that knowledge is power. You know, and that's another thing. Families and caregivers, and even people who have been recently diagnosed, there's this denial. They just don't want to learn more. Like I can't tell you how many caregivers have told me, oh, I know all about dementia. I live with it every day. No, you know about dementia with one person. You know about this person's dementia. You don't know about dementia. You just know about your situation. That's one person. So for my life has been that I've really seen an overview, and I've been so blessed to be able to have so much contact with different situations and with people with dementia, with different dementias, different stages of dementia. And by the way, my baby was late stage, nonverbal. Laura, I knew they were in there. I knew there was a way, you had to find a way to open up that door that they were closing, because they could no longer communicate with the outside world. So somehow or another, there was a way to get in there. And there's quite a few ways, even with late stage dementia, to at least have that glimmer of opening that window for a short time, even if it's for a short time, because they're still there. That's what's so important to know. And never lose that in your heart, that they're still there. If your loved one had broken their spine, all right, just a person without dementia who had broken their spine, and they were paralyzed from the waist, you would never expect them to get up and start running again. So my question is, why is it that so many caregivers, the dementia is so devastating? Because there is an expectation. There is an expectation that this person should not be this way. But if the person with the broken spine, their loved one's finally accept it, that this is a, you know, this is the way it's going to be. And then they adjust their lives for it. They're living with the moment.
Now, there's a lot of evidence that music also helps bring people out of dementia. Have you used music?
Yes, it does. But use headphones. I'm so impressed with the organizations that are using MP3 players. Here's the reason why it's different than playing music in your house is very important too. But if you put the headphones on, they're hyper focused on their music, the music that they loved, and it will bring them into the present with you. I've seen miracle videos about the MP3 players using the headphones. I wish every home caregiver had them. You know, a person gets really stressed, you can put those MP3 players on them and it starts to calm them down. You're taking them to the doctors, you put the MP3 players on and they don't get the sensory overload of all the noise and everything. They're hyper-focused on the music. I think it's amazing. Music is amazing, but the MP3 players really bring it home.
And there is an organization that actually gives them away.
Yeah, there's several. I've researched several, and there's one in England that gives them away. There's one, I can't think of exactly where it is right now. I have all this written down. I'm always researching things, so I'm unfortunately not holding everything in my brain.
I think one of them might be the Purple Angels. So if I can get that info, I can put in the show notes so people can look into that for themselves.
Oh, there's another in Spain. There's another one in Spain too. So, you know, there's not only in English, all these resources. My book has just been translated into Spanish, and we're sending it to the publisher next week.
Oh, that's great.
So, and it's getting translated into Russian also.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That'll be really helpful. Can you read us a short excerpt from your book?
I picked out a chapter 6 from its memory, the roles we play. I think it's important in the sense of, well, you'll see when I read it. Florence watched as the young woman came into the room. She was holding a glass of something and offered it to her. She seemed very nice and Florence liked her at once. There was something familiar about her. Maybe she would know when her daughter was coming to visit. "Where's my daughter?" she asked. "I'm your daughter, Mom." "No, you're not. You're coming to get me later." "No, she's coming to get me later." Then I go into, "One of the most difficult times for the family of a person with dementia is when their loved one fails to recognize them. Families say things like, 'I feel I've lost my mom, my dad isn't there anymore, my husband is gone and living with a stranger.' But it isn't daughter, husband, mother, simply one of the roles we play throughout our lives. Isn't your name that they might have forgotten just a label, a way of identifying us? Most of us have played the roles of precious child, bridegroom, mother, grandmother, etc. When you meet somebody for the first time, they usually ask you what you do. So the occupational role gets in the mix. I'm a lawyer, accountant, and so on. Then there are the personality roles, stubborn, intelligent, shy, friendly. All of these roles are continuously changing. Our personalities undergo constant metamorphosis as we accumulate knowledge through experience. Like a collage composed of pieces of our past, we are always rearranging those pieces into new environments and belief systems. We become different people throughout our lives, wearing a different mask or persona each time. This normally happens over a long period of time. In 20 years, we might look back and ask ourselves, "What the hell was I thinking?" Usually we do. The personality can change unexpectedly when our brain experiences cognitive decline. When neurons become damaged or the connections to the information in them are lost, the person might abruptly seem like a completely different person. Some people might retain their basic character, introvert, extrovert, stubborn, generous, etc., but even that can change. Then I go into just a little, Jane has dementia, but she's still the same person. What has changed is Jane's brain's accumulated experiential learning and her access to it. What's left has been rearranged into a new persona with a new role. She is no longer a personality the family recognizes as mother and wife. The script has been rewritten using the basic elements of her life that are still available. But now, instead of playing the role of doting wife and devoted mother, she has become another version of herself. Jane's persona has changed, but it is still her. She is still Jane. Mom can't play the role of mother anymore when she can't remember that you are her daughter, or know she even has a daughter. If all you know of the woman you love and care for is the mother role, you're missing who she still is. Every one of those roles she played in her life made her the woman who is still here, but now with dementia.
Wow, that's a lot to think about. And it reminds me of one of the books in our collection with a daughter. Her mother had dementia, already had that, and she was going through some old photographs and saw a photo of her mom when she was very young. Beautiful picture. It's on the cover of the book. And she realized she didn't know her mother at all. She hadn't seen that picture. She didn't know why was her mother laughing and smiling? What was she doing? She was about 19. What was she doing? And it was too late to ask.
In the earlier stages is when you can get to really know who that person is.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond being mom. You know, our parents never tell us everything about their lives. They just don't. They're too busy child raising or holding up the image of being mom or dad.
Working.
Whereas, yeah, exactly. So, you know, those photo albums are really great. You don't say, remember this mom. You say, oh, this is you, mom, at 16 years old. Oh, you were smiling so much. You must have been a happy teenager. These kind of questions, because most of their memories do go way back now. You know, the present memories are not as as accurate. It's a good way to know things about your parents, and even the hidden things that they kept will come out, believe me. You'll really get to, maybe you'll get to know more about your parents than you ever really wanted to know. But as a result, when you start doing that, there's an acceptance, because the person that has dementia is not a stranger, because all of her experiences have just been rearranged into a different form. Because she can't be anybody else other than what she's experienced. So this is, and if you can understand that, if you can take a look at your loved one and understand that she's still all of her experiences in a different form, a lot of times it's easier to accept them just the way they are right now.
Okay. That's a wonderful way to end our interview with that advice.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much. And where can we find you on social media other than Facebook?
Well, I have the Infinite Mind Dementia Project on Twitter and then the website. That's pretty much it for now. I find I'm spending too much time on social media, and I'm going to have to get a volunteer in my new nonprofit to help me out with this, because it's sort of becoming very overwhelming. And I do want to get the next book out.
Can you tell us a little bit about the next book?
The next book is going to be, you know, I've been writing all these blogs, and I've been focusing on how people are responding to different things, and what they write on Facebook is to, you know, what their problems are and what they want to know. So I focus my blogs basically on the that kind of situations. So I'm taking that material and then putting it together into a book, which is called Dementia Inside Out. So it's going to, I'm still going with taking you into the person with dementia inside their world to better understand their outer world. And that's what the new book is, Dementia Inside Out.
Okay. Do you know when that'll be ready, or it's in the works?
That's kind of hard to ask a writer when their book's going to be ready.
Right.
I'd love it to be ready next week.
Yeah. And you said that you're a nonprofit now?
Yes. We have a nonprofit called, it's in Spanish, it's Asociación Bienestar en la Vejez Dorada. It's an association of well-being in the golden years. So we're actually not only focusing, I have the Dementia Project as a project inside the nonprofit, but we have other programs that we're going to be developing for healthy aging and how to care for people in the home without having dementia. You know, there's a lot to do with aging now, seeing as everybody seems to be getting so much older so quickly.
Yeah.
So.
True. Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's been lovely to meet you and speak with you. And I can't wait to look deep inside your book and follow your blog, all of that.
Thank you.
Really good stuff. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. This has been fun.
Thank you for listening to Untangling Alzheimer's and Dementia, an ALDS Authors podcast. For more details on this episode, please see the show notes. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review and subscribe to it wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. For more information on ALDS Authors, please visit ALDSAuthors.com. While you're there, be sure to browse our online bookstore where you will find hundreds of carefully vetted books on Alzheimer's and dementia. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Please email your thoughts on the podcast to allsauthors@gmail.com. We are a 501c3 charitable organization totally reliant on donations to do what we do. If our author's stories move you, please consider contributing to our cause. Remember, you are not alone. One can sing a lonely song, but we chose to form a choir and create harmony.